This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Ever wonder why some people love haunted houses or are always first in line for the latest fright film? Meanwhile, others avoid Halloween attractions and scary stories at all costs, or even struggle with daily fears such as going into their own basements or being in the dark. I recently spoke with Dr. Catherine Brownlow, a psychiatrist with the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center, about why some people like a good scare while others avoid it like the plague. Dr. Brownlow, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So how does fear work in the first place? How does it function in the brain? Why do we get scared?
Sure, that's a great question. So scientists have been studying fear for a long time, and we've understood one part of it quite well through the use of animal models. What we know is that there's a part of the brain called the amygdala that is present in both animals as well as humans, and that really is kind of the center that mediates the fear response. So when you see something scary, like a spider or a snake, or you feel like you're in danger in some way, the amygdala immediately activates. And that is what results in both the physical experience that we have when we're afraid, which includes your heart racing and breathing being faster, goosebumps on the back of your neck, but also results in a brain experience of being both more alert and also having the emotion of being fearful.
So fear serves a purpose.
Well, it sure does. What it does is it kind of puts us on alert so that we can respond if we're in a situation that's dangerous. So if we're walking through the woods and we see a stick, but we don't know that it's a stick, it could be a snake, we want to be able to respond to that so we don't get bitten by the snake and get injured.
Now, you mentioned spiders and snakes. That's just a couple of fears that people have. Have you ever counted how many fears and phobias actually exist?
There are so many fears and phobias. There are some pretty common ones that seem to be pretty well preserved across different ages and different cultures. And they tend to be things that are pretty risky to us. So, for instance, a fear of bears or a fear of heights. Then there are also some fears that are kind of culturally mediated. For instance, a fear of clowns, which certainly has been popular in the media lately. Those are things that seem to be influenced by the culture that we're in and kind of the stories that we tell or the stories that we read.
Are we born with fear or do we learn fear?
We're definitely born with a certain innate fear. Even infants will be startled by loud noises or bright lights. But then as we get older, there are definitely fears that we learn, and that can be influenced by our life experiences, by the beliefs and experiences of people who are important to us, and then the things that we kind of hear in the culture as we get older, things that are happening in the world, the environment, politics, your future, those kinds of things.
If your parents are fearful, Dr. Brownlow, is it more likely that you'll grow up a fearful person?
Well, that's an interesting thing because what we also know is that there are certain people who are born with temperaments that are more likely or less likely to be afraid. So there are some people who are really thrill seekers. They ride the highest roller coasters and they bungee jump and cliff dive. And those folks tend not to be fearful as kids and as adults and tend not to be as influenced by the fears of the people around them, like their parents. Then there are other folks who, if temperamentally, they are already a little bit more shy or a little bit more fearful. Those folks are potentially going to be more vulnerable if they have a mother who's afraid of dogs, for them to kind of pick up on that and also be afraid of dogs.
So let's build on that some more. The idea of why do some people just really seem to enjoy a good scare? They'll stand in line hours waiting to get into a haunted house, or they'll be the first person in line for the next scary movie that comes out.
Sure.
What motivates them? What drives them?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of different things. You know, one of the things is that once you've had a good scare and you have that response, that physical response that we talked about earlier, your body then responds by kind of turning down the volume once you're out of that scary situation. So heart rate goes down, muscles relax, the brain feels calmer, and actually people can feel subjectively a lot calmer and a lot more grounded after being scared. So that's a pretty pleasurable kind of attention release experience. You know, another thing is that it kind of gets you out of your own head. So we all have worries that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. If you go to a scary movie and kind of get out of those worries for a little while, sometimes afterwards you don't feel as concerned or worried about going to your boss and asking for a raise because, hey, you survived that.
It raises your immunity to fear?
Well, it does in a way. It kind of gives the person some perspective on what do they really need to be afraid of or not.
So is this is there somewhat of an addiction at work here, people who enjoy this kind of pleasurable roller coaster, that they get hooked on it?
Well, certainly some people can. I mean, anything taken to an extreme can be problematic. It's kind of a personal thing, whether somebody's going to get really stuck on something like that or not.
So when do you know, can too much fear be a bad thing, or when do you know that you've crossed that line between this being healthy and not healthy?
Yeah. I mean, it really depends on the subjective experience of the person. I've talked to people who have felt like they've really been pushed by friends or family to do things that they're afraid of. And especially for certain people, that's really not a good idea at all. Everybody experiences these kinds of things differently. As long as somebody is having a good time and enjoying themselves and not pressuring their family or scaring people who are close to them, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with having a good scare. But, you know, if folks are feeling like they have to push themselves to do something, or it's uncomfortable, or it's not something that they enjoy, you know, we certainly would recommend not doing that.
Mm-hmm. What's a good yardstick? If the fear is interfering with your daily life, is that how a doctor would look at it?
Absolutely. So when we think about kind of fears in a psychiatric sense, we think about anxiety disorders. And when things cross the line so that a person is unable to do the things in their daily life that they want to do, then we really start to become concerned that there's something that a person could need treatment for. Some common experiences that people will have is they'll eventually have difficulty leaving the house, going to the grocery store, or interacting with other people. So that obviously makes it extremely difficult to live any kind of a normal life. So those are times that we start to worry. But I would certainly say that if a person was concerned that their fears or their anxieties were keeping them from living the life that they want to live, you know, I would certainly encourage them to go and talk to somebody and just kind of have an evaluation and let a professional see if there's anything that we could do to help.
Is that a major difference, the fear of a haunted house? You know, it's not really dangerous, as opposed to, say, jumping out of a plane where you know there's some risk involved and you feel fear mm-hmm. because of that?
Yep, it's absolutely different. And that's I'm glad you mentioned that, because there's another element of fear and anxiety aside from the amygdala that we talked about before, which is our own conscious thoughts. And when our consciousness knows that we're unlikely to be injured, if we're on a safe roller coaster at Kings Island or if we are at a haunted house, you know, our brain still knows it's highly unlikely that the guy with the axe is actually going to come at us to kill us. But when you're in a different situation where there is a very real risk, the consciousness can't modulate to calm things down as well. So if I'm going through the haunted house, my brain's saying it's okay, this is pretend. So even when I'm feeling my heart race and the physical symptoms of fear, I'm not overwhelmed by them. But I'll tell you, you couldn't get me to jump out of a plane, because
not
consciously I know what could happen with that, and it's a risk that I'm just not willing to take.
But to some extent, you're saying that people who enjoy haunted houses and scary movies, that's an element of thrill-seeking at work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also an element of escapism. Just kind of takes you out of your daily life and gives your brain kind of a little bit of a tickle, accessing some of those emotions that we really don't experience on a day-to-day basis. I mean, our lives in the modern world are generally pretty safe. So it can be kind of fun to play around with that sense of safety and dangerousness, kind of living on the edge a little bit.
Have there ever been any studies done on this, or have you looked at whether people with fear problems have more trouble around Halloween?
You know, I don't know that there's been any formal studies done, but certainly it's not surprising. There is a thing about the Halloween season being the time that darkness is expanding in terms of more, you know, less sunlight during the year. And there is kind of an innate human sense that darkness is unsafe. You know, that's where the beasties are. That's when you can't see any possible threats. So it's certainly very compelling from a societal standpoint. And if people do tend more towards anxiety and nervousness, they certainly could have more trouble around these times.
Have you ever done any studies directly with people who do go to haunted houses?
I don't know that anybody's looked into that. I don't know that anybody's ever looked into that. It's an interesting idea.
So what are some tips for assessing the fear in your daily life and some ways to overcome it?
Well, one of the things for people to be considering is, you know, just how often do they feel fearful or anxious? And how much time does their mind spend kind of worrying, thinking about, well, what if this, what if that, kind of playing out scenarios. And then really trying to understand, are there times that fear or anxiety keeps somebody from being able to do the things that they want to do, like go out with friends, go to the movies, go to a grocery store, or even get to work. Some of the things that people can do to help themselves have to do with something that we call mindfulness. So there are ways to kind of reground your brain when it is kind of spinning with these what-if worried thoughts. There are breathing exercises that can be very helpful. There's a technique called progressive muscle relaxation, imagery, kind of a guided imagery or a personal imagining yourself in a safe place. Those are all ways that people can kind of calm down that worried, nervous part of their brain on their own. There's also a technique that therapists use called exposure therapy. And this is helpful primarily for people who have a particular thing that they're afraid of. For example, fear of flying. You expose the person to the thing that they're afraid of for a brief period of time, you know, while at the same time helping them to stay grounded and stay calm, and then take them out of the situation after just a very brief period of time, and then progressively increasing the length of time that they are exposed to that, and really teaching their brain that this is safe, this is not something to be overwhelmed by, and that they have some control in the situation. And that's a highly effective technique, but we generally would recommend that folks do that with a professional, particularly if the fear or anxiety is very intense.
I don't know if you've heard the old acronym for fear, false expectations appearing real. I guess there's some truth to that then.
Well, there is some truth to that, but I would say that it's also very important to pay attention to fear. It is a signaling system that is very, very well preserved over millennia because it keeps us safe. So when we've done studies on people who've had damage to their brains so that they don't have that fear response, those folks are actually quite a bit more likely to become injured in their daily lives because they don't have that signal that what they're about to do might be dangerous or they might need to rethink their plans. So I always recommend that people, you know, kind of pay attention to their guts. When I'm working with, you know, doctors in training, and we're working with patients who might be somewhat unpredictable, again, I say, you got to listen to your fear. You got to listen to the signals that your body is giving you so that you can stay safe.
Do you think with the increasing graphic violence on TV and in video games, are people becoming desensitized to some extent to things that would otherwise make them fearful?
I mean, I think that there's certainly a risk to that. There's also other issues at play in terms of kind of being able to tell reality from fiction, as well as how our kids are developing empathy and concern for other people. But that's definitely something that I would recommend that parents be thoughtful of. The other thing that we know is that when kids are younger, they're brains aren't well developed enough to understand really what's real and what's not real. And so those kids are also more likely to be fearful of things that otherwise wouldn't be scary. So things like haunted houses or scary movies are really not appropriate, certainly for kids under the age of 7, because those guys still really believe that the monster under the bed is real. But at the same time, you know, being thoughtful about who your kid is, there are just some kids temperamentally who are more sensitive to these kinds of things, and you don't want to push your kids into things that make them afraid or make them feel unsafe. There's no real good reason for that, and then you get a really scared, unhappy kid.
Yeah, we're talking about people who might be troubled by Halloween. Do you have any advice for people who maybe their fear ratchets up a little bit around Halloween?
Well, I certainly would say that some of the consciousness things that we've been talking about, kind of reminding yourself that these are pretend, trying to kind of see through the initial scary into the technicals of it. For scary movies, you know, when I was younger and I'd be watching something on TV that was scary, my dad, who actually used to work in TV, would kind of start talking through the technicals of, you know, there's somebody behind the camera, and then they've got somebody with, you know, a microphone, and where do you think the light's coming from? And that kind of got me out of the experience of seeing the thing that was on the TV and thinking about the process around it and reminding myself that that wasn't real. So that can certainly be helpful for folks when they get nervous around this time of year. You know, that's just a mask. They probably bought that at the store and, you know, this and that and the other. And then certainly there's no shame in avoiding things that bother you. If haunted houses and scary movies are not for you, you know, beg off and tell your friends, I'll see you November 1st.
But for somebody who does enjoy haunted houses and horror movies, you say that's fine, right?
Go for it. Have a good time.
So what are your plans on for Halloween? Are you going to go to a haunted house or watch a scary movie?
Well, I will tell you, I am actually not a big fan of those kinds of things. I have two little boys, so we're going to be out trick-or-treating with Spider-Man and a Secret Service agent for Halloween.
Well, Dr. Brownlow, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It was great to speak with you.
With the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center, Dr. Catherine Brownlow, who studies the science of fear.